Story City, Ames, and surrounding area.
Support for KHOI is provided in part by Stevens Auditorium, presenting Cirque May, Wednesday, October 2nd at 7 p.m. Tickets and more information can be found at center.iastate.edu.
Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Paul Wearson.
And I'm Dennis Hart. It's a pleasure being with you on this Wednesday, Paul, the first Wednesday in October. And we have a special program today commemorating something that took place 4 decades ago here in Iowa. It was 40 years ago this coming Friday that Pope John Paul II came to the state. It was an amazing day and an amazing story.
Well, the Pope had been invited by Iowa farmer John Hayes, who wrote a letter inviting the pontiff to visit the Heartland during the Pope's tour of the United States. And the Pope came in one of the most iconic events in the state's history.
As you might imagine, the state's newspapers and TV stations covered this visit wall to wall. At KCCI-TV in Des Moines, Dave Busick and Kevin Cooney were young reporters who got the chance to cover the biggest story of their lives up to that moment. Kevin's going to join us later in this broadcast, but first, we are so pleased to have Dave Busick on the phone with us. Dave went on to become a news anchor and later news director at KCCI. He retired last year. Dave, welcome to Local Talk.
Good morning, gentlemen. Nice to be with you.
It is a pleasure having you here. I understand you are in Colorado.
Right. Out here doing some hiking with our kids. So it's just past 6 in the morning here. So my voice is, I'm trying to keep it down a little bit, not wake people in the house. But it's a real pleasure to be with you and to remember this really historic event.
It was an amazing event. And Dave, you had just been at KCCI for a few months. You had worked at WHO Radio. You'd been hired a few months before the papal visit in 1979. How did the station prepare for this gigantic story? What are your memories of how the station got ready for it?
Well, you're absolutely right. I had started at the end of April of 1979, so timing is everything. So it was great to be there at that time. What I remember is that there was not a whole lot of time to plan for the event. I think it was something like 6 weeks. And even the folks who had to organize this event and pull off the traffic and the security really had to crunch things together very quickly. But my recollections, and you guys just jump in with questions, are that there were three places where we wanted to get live video and audio of the Pope, and that was the airport arrival. And then he flew by helicopter from the airport down to St. Patrick's Church in the Rolling Hills of Madison County, southwest of Des Moines, a little church they call the Irish Settlement, so we wanted video and audio from there. Then, of course, the major event was up at Living History Farms in Urbandale, where there were some 300,000 people expected and, in fact, did turn up for that event. So my part of it was, and I was very fortunate to be able to be down at St. Patrick's in Cumming, part of a very small pool of reporters. There were hundreds and hundreds of media types credentialed for the visit to the airport and to Living History Farms, but only 30 of us were approved to be down at St. Patrick's Irish Settlement in Cumming. And it's a pretty interesting story how we got the video out of there. I don't know how much detail you want me to go into. So
go into everything, you know. Dave. We have time.
We do.
Okay. So the video and audio of the Pope himself were set up in a pool. So there was down at St. Patrick's, there was one camera outside to get his arrival and maybe two cameras inside. And that was all the local stations, Iowa Public Television, and some help from the network. So we had pool video from the airport, from St. Patrick's, and from Living History Farms. But there was really no live announcer down there. So, for instance, when the Pope finally gets into the church, you know, we're going to be able to hear his homily and be able to see all of that. But in terms of his arrival outside the church, there was just going to be silence. So I was assigned to go down there and sort of provide the play-by-play commentary to this pool video. And you have to remember, in 1979, there was no such thing as cell phones. So we thought, well, this will be easy. We'll just have the local phone company put in a telephone line. And the pool reporters were assigned outside the church door, so we weren't even allowed to go inside. Well, as it turns out, it was such a small telephone exchange down there that they didn't have any phone lines available that we could rent for the day, because they were being used by security forces, by the network pool, that kind of thing. And so, like, what in the world do we do to get Dave's voice back to KCTI as we cover this historic event? So luckily, one of our engineers, a guy by the name of Steve Ho, lives in a farmhouse a couple of miles from there. And the church is very hilly down there, and we had no way to get an audio signal out. And so we got the great idea, or at least Steve did, let's get a two-way radio from one of our news cars and see if we can get that signal back to the station. And so, again, imagine every police procedural movie or TV show you've seen where the dispatch calls the officer and he reaches down and picks up one of those little microphones with the red press-to-talk button on it and got the curly sort of elastic cord that goes down to the two-way radio, and they talk back to the station. So that's what we had in our news cars in those days. And it was literally press-to-talk. So we raided one of the news cars, took the two-way radio out of that, put a car battery in the yard outside St. Patrick's, and then Steve lived a couple of miles away, so we couldn't get that two-way radio signal all the way back to downtown Des Moines. But Steve went up into his attic with a receiver, was able to get an antenna up there, and able to receive the signal from this two-way radio, and then he turned it around and pumped it back down to downtown Des Moines, either by, through, I think, through his phone line. So this was a very... just put together with Scotch tape and rubber bands kind of operation to cover this very historic event. And I remember I had a little wood antenna with a magnet on the end of it that we stuck on the end of a fence post, a metal fence post. And, gentlemen, that's how I was able to get an audio signal back to viewers of KCCI as the Pope arrived. And, of course, that's another whole story.
Well, Dave Paul here, the co-host, I can really identify that because I was in radio back in the 60s at college, and it was primitive by today's standards. But I was saying that, really, you were lucky to have the luck of the draw to go to that small church, because unlike I was up in Clive, I lived there, and I actually walked out to where the Pope was. It was a huge crowd, as you know, but you actually saw the Pope in the most intimate setting of all.
Well, I ended up being about 10 feet away from him. And so, you know, keep in mind, I'm a Catholic kid from St. Louis. I went to Catholic school, went to Mass my whole time growing up. So this was quite a thrill. And, of course, as a reporter, particularly as a young reporter, you want to separate your emotions from the story you're covering. But by the same token, this is the Pope. And so I have to admit, I was pretty excited and pretty thrilled. That day was a very cold, cloudy, kind of windy day. October 4th, 1979, it's one of those dates that always sticks in my mind. And we got word that the Pope's plane had landed at the airport, and he was boarding the helicopters for the short ride from the Des Moines airport on the south side down to Madison County. And I'll be darned if we could see the helicopters in the distance and hear the engines, and I'll be darned if the clouds didn't part and sunlight started filtering down through holes in the clouds, highlighting the trees, which are just starting to come into full color in a field right across the street from this very picturesque little white clapboard church down there in Cumming. And the helicopters land in a cloud of dust. And then what I remember, we were stationed right outside the front door along the walk that the Pope was going to walk in. And, of course, we're behind a little barricade. But what I remember most of all, after all the weeks of planning and all the hubbub and all the speculation, it was once the helicopter rotors died down, was just the quiet. It was just quiet. And here comes the Pope in full vestment, walking across the gravel road and then up this lane. And I'm standing right there on the barricade, and there he is. And he looks over at us, and of course he was Polish, but he spoke some heavily accented English, and he looks at us with a little twinkle in his eye and a smile, and he says to the reporters who were gathered there, "How did you find this place? You know, like, gee, I'm surprised out here in the middle of nowhere that I'd be finding a bunch of reporters standing around." Of course, you know, we've been there since 9 o'clock in the morning, making sure that because we were subject to the security sweep and all of that. But I thought, oh, that's great. The Pope is cracking jokes, but he was a big guy. just a large man, just an incredible presence, as you might imagine, as he very slowly and peacefully walked along on what became sort of a sun-kissed, beautiful afternoon. And again, what sticks out to me most of all was just the absolute quiet. I don't know what I was expecting, but it was just a calm, peaceful scene, and to be able to be so close to him. You know, I talked, when we got back to the station at the end of the day after the Pope had left, I talked to many of our staff members who said, well, I was there, but I never actually saw him because I was shooting a camera. So I saw him through my camera, but I never actually saw the guy. So I felt pretty darn fortunate to be that close and to be within about 10 feet of the Pope.
Dave, you're that close to the Pope. Describe the crowd outside the church and then describe what happened inside the church.
Well, I'm at a bit of a disadvantage of what happened inside the church because I wasn't allowed to go inside the church. I had to stay outside. But one thing I remember is just before the helicopters touched down, the parish priest, Father John Richter, was very young. I was 25, and he struck me as my age or somewhat younger. And could you imagine, you know, so many people go through the priesthood to never get anywhere near to someone or an experience like this. And here he is as a young man, and the Pope is about to walk through the front doors. One thing I remember for certain is just before the helicopters touched down, Father Richter got up in front of the congregation and asked, wouldn't somebody please come fill in the front pews? I mean, and if that's not a typical Iowa story, I don't know what is. But nobody sat up front. I thought, boy, in my church in St. Louis, a couple of people would have been knifed in order to be in the front row and be that close to the church. But no, Iowans being the way they are, nobody wanted to sit up front, which I always thought was kind of humorous. So finally, a few families averted themselves and moved into the front row, into the front pew. But, he was just very quiet. He walked in. I think I may have had an audio feed of what he was saying inside, may have had a small portable television outside to watch. But, you know, most of my responsibilities were outside covering the arrival. But I know that he went in. And I recall he liked children. He was very drawn to children. And there were a couple of young children, both outside the church and inside the church, that he blessed. I believe that he picked up one or two of the smaller children up the aisle. Father Richter struck me as being very nervous, I could imagine. And to have the Pope in your church, and Mass was held, and mostly it was just serene. That's the word that comes to me. I don't know if Living History Farms could be described as serene with 300,000 people, but this was a peaceful, respectful, and it was almost surreal how quiet things were, both inside and outside the church.
Well, Dave, I was out there at the Living History Farms, and I can verify what you said, because that was a crowd of 350,000 people. And what I remember is the quiet, that this crowd was so large, and it was absolutely quiet, reverent, serene is the word you used. That's a good choice. I was amazed that a crowd that size could be that silent.
Well, and that's absolutely right. And so the Mass was held. We're talking 40 years ago. I don't remember exactly how long it was. But then the Pope greeted some people inside the church after the Mass and then came back on out. And the whole thing, in my mind, almost proceeds in slow motion. But I think it was just everyone was, I don't know, it was just such a special thing. I think everybody was calm. They realized that he was there. I think he had a calming presence on the whole thing, and you just really felt in the presence of someone special. You know, we've all met, I mean, he's a man, and he's just a man, like any of us would be a man or a woman, but there are just some people in life, separate and apart from the trappings of the office, who have a presence, who I felt have a connection in some way to a higher power that most of us can only dream about. And I think everybody there just felt that this was a day that they were going to remember for the rest of their lives. But to be in the presence of this man who was so calm and so comfortable in the role. And he hadn't been Pope for very long. And, of course, he ended up being Pope for a very long time, grew old in the office. But this was a man who seemed born to the role. And he's, you know, I've said about some political candidates over the years, and I covered a lot of politics. Some people just filled out the suit. Some people grew into the suit. This was a man who seemed to be born to fill out those vestments and seemed very comfortable and knew who he was, knew what his role was, knew the impact that he had on people. And yet, what I remember most of all when I was so close to him was the twinkle in the eye and the little smirk he was a real human being.
If you have just joined us, we're talking with Dave Busick of KCCI-TV, the longtime reporter, anchor, and news director of KCCI, who covered the visit of Pope John Paul II 40 years ago this coming Friday. And Dave, you were at the church in coming. You've been describing your experiences there. What do you remember about the crowd outside the church in terms of who was there? Had families come and brought their children, their young children? Who was in the crowd that day?
There were really very few dignitaries because the Pope wanted to meet real people. So I remember Bishop Dingman, the Des Moines Diocese bishop at the time, walking side by side with the Pope, and there were a few Vatican officials who were with him. Of course, security was very tight. This was treated like any presidential visit that I may have covered. Lots of Secret Service around. Lots of security. But beyond that, it wouldn't have been a typical Sunday at St. Patrick's, I don't imagine, but I think the crowd was very typical. There were not a lot of dignitaries there. I don't remember if Governor Ray traveled down to St. Patrick's with him or not. I know that he met him at the airport. I don't remember Governor Ray being there. But beyond that, it was people coming in their Sunday finest. Men in suits, women in dresses, wearing hats, children dressed up very nicely, and it looked like a typical Sunday at any rural church at that time, although I imagine people got their very best clothes on for the visit of the Pope. When the Pope boarded the helicopters and took off toward the north, toward Living History Farms, then everybody filtered outside, and it just turned into a gem of an afternoon, and I think the people were, again, feeling the same as I felt, that this was just something really special that had happened. So my assignment after that point was I had to get back to the station and do a story on this part of the visit. So because pool reporters were restricted, I wasn't even allowed to have a photographer there, best of my recollection. Or I think if a photographer was able to join me later. Of course, in those days, we shot on film. We had a big film camera. So we did some interviews with people, family members in the churchyard, and I think there may have been even a meal afterwards, if I recall correctly, out in the churchyard. Folks had a church meal, and everybody just felt that it was a very special moment. So then I had to get back to the station because this was mid-afternoon, and of course we were going to have a 6 o'clock newscast. We were still on the air live, but if we had to get back, and if you recall, and Dennis, you know you were up there, the concerns about the traffic jams were one of the biggest concerns about planning this event up at Living History Farms. And in fact, they ended up closing off Interstates 35 and 80 up there by Ryder Corner and used it as a parking lot for buses and cars and things like that. So we just thought traffic was going to be at a complete standstill. And how in the world am I going to get my film and get back and write a story in the newsroom? So we had rented, after the Pope left, they lifted all of the air restrictions, and if you can picture a helicopter from an old TV show by the name of Whirlybirds with sort of a big glass bubble front on it with no doors, one of these things landed that we had chartered. I have no idea where we got it, and I climbed into this thing with my film and strapped myself in, and this helicopter took off, and off we went to downtown Des Moines. Now, the station was located at the time at 9th and Pleasant, right near downtown with lots of tall buildings, and we had a big tower in our backyard. And to be honest with you, I can't even remember where we landed. it was in the days before emergency helicopters, so it wasn't up by Methodist Hospital. We landed in a field somewhere near downtown Des Moines, and I can remember flying with no doors on this car. And again, it was on this helicopter, and it was a pretty chilly ride because it was a cool day. And I just thought, well, this is going to be a day I'm going to remember for the rest of my life. Little did I know I'd be talking about it 40 years later. But That's pretty much my recollections from the day. So I got into the newsroom, started writing my story, we had to process the film in those days, which took about 45 minutes. In the meantime, the station's still on the air because the Pope is up at Living History Farms. And Paul Rhodes was anchoring, doing the live coverage from the studio. Kevin, whom you'll talk to in a few minutes, was out at Living History Farms. And, of course, for Kevin being the Irish Catholic kid growing up at the Holy Trinity in Beaverdale and going to Dowling High School, again, a very special day for Kevin as well, and he'll be able to describe all of that for you.
Well, you know, Dave, I lived in Clive. This is Paul again. And I remember there was a logo associated with Pope's visit, and the logos were in different colors. And white was the Pope visit zone out there in Living History Farms. In other words, we were under martial law out there. There were helmeted National Guardsmen at intersections. As you say, the traffic was rerouted, and some routes were closed off. I had to walk from my place in Hickman out all the way to Living History Farms. It was quite a long walk. And I remember that since I had a white sticker on my windshield, I couldn't go to work that day because you couldn't get down. You were just restricted to that area. I wanted to stay home anyway to see the Pope, but it was really martial law in Des Moines. I remember those different colored and I still have that sticker, that white sticker. It was a beautiful logo. But when you were talking about people who were in office at that time, Dave, it just struck me how many people who were currently serving in various capacities at that time turned out to be iconic people in the history of Iowa and the church. First of all, Pope John is iconic. I remember Pope John the 23rd in Vatican II. I remember this pope as very influential and important. But you mentioned Bishop Dingman, who was really quite a force in Des Moines. And also, you remembered accurately that Robert Ray, our great governor, was in office at that time. So not only the Pope, but in terms of Iowa, all these fabulous, later venerated people were in office at that time. It was kind of a special time when you mentioned those names.
It really was. Governor Ray played a huge role in allowing the Iowa National Guard to go into the planning process. And one of Governor Ray's top aides was a guy you all know by the name of Ken Quinn. He had been ambassador to U.S. ambassador to Cambodia, and he was on Governor Ray's staff at that time. And I think Governor Ray pretty much said, "Ken, you got to make this thing happen." Of course, Ken has been the longtime executive director at the World Food Prize in Des Moines. Just has had an amazing life and a terrific memory to remember all of this stuff. And then Ken and Governor Ray went on after this point to oversee Iowa admitting so many refugees from Southeast Asia following the Vietnam War. And that's the kind of leaders that they were and are. Governor Ray, I covered him for many years, and he just was a charismatic, smart, tough guy. But he got so many great things done for Iowa. And he was a wonderful photographer. And I was reminded reading in the Des Moines Register this past weekend, writing about the visit of the Pope, that the photographers weren't able to get up and get any kind of an aerial shot of the crowded Living History Farms. So they knew that Governor Ray would be flying in a National Guard helicopter. And so they asked him to bring his camera along and take some photos of the crowd, which, of course, he was only too happy to do. He loved that kind of thing.
Dave, we have about a minute and a half left. You have had a great career at KCCI. You became news director following in the footsteps of Russ Van Dyke and Paul Rhodes. You all three are legendary, and I mean that sincerely. Where does covering the Pope rank in all the years you've been in journalism? You were there for more than 40 years. How high does this story rank in terms of your coverage?
Well, it's certainly in somewhere in the top three. I feel very fortunate to have had such a wonderful career at a great station like KCCI. In my top three, I was about the only reporter allowed inside the Fort Madison Penitentiary during a prison riot a couple of years after the Pope's visit. This was a prison riot in 1981, which is kind of a huge story, and I just had a big exclusive there. I covered a number of presidents, vice presidents, members of Congress, but the Pope sticks right up there. You know, there were some huge stories. I probably have to say the biggest story was the flood of 93 when Des Moines lost water service for 12 years. I was news director. I'm sorry, for 12 days. 12 days was bad enough. 12 years would have been
on. Yeah, that would have been a lot.
I was news director at that time, not out on the streets, but we were pretty much in live continuous coverage for 5 to 7 days because that was a real crisis to the community. So that'd be near the top. And I would certainly say the visit of the Pope is something, as I said, every October 4th it comes along. Yeah. For the past 40 years, I've gone, this was the day. You know, it's one of those dates that stick out in your mind, like November 22nd of 1963 or 9/11. Yeah. It was just a very special day.
Yes, it was, Dave. And I think that I'm glad you mentioned Ken Quinn, because for several years I was the voice of the World Food Prize at the ceremony at the Capitol, and I got to know Ken very well. He's such a soft-spoken, wonderful guy. He really is.
Dave, we are out of time. It has gone far too fast. First off, I want to thank you for joining us, but then I want to congratulate you on a great career at KCCI, which that station has been number one in news since, I think, the moment you signed on the air back in the 1950s, and deservedly so. You, Russ Van Dyke, and Paul Rhodes had a great deal to do with that, and I want to congratulate you on a great career.
Thank you both very much. It's a pleasure talking with you, and say hi to Kevin for me.
You bet. Kevin Cooney is coming up next, so don't go away after this brief timeout. Yes, indeed. Kevin Cooney of KCCI is going to join us with his memories of that unforgettable day 40 years ago this Friday when the Pope came to Iowa.
Bad news, baby. but we've got good news. Really, welcome back to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Paul Wearson.
And I'm Dennis Hart. It is 27 minutes after the hour, and if you are just joining us, we're looking back 40 years to October 4th, 1979. It was a Thursday back then, and it was the day Pope John Paul II came to Iowa. It was one of the biggest, most emotional events in the state's history. Just a few minutes ago, we heard from Dave Busick, who retired last year as KCCI's news director, but who, 40 years ago, was a young reporter covering the Pope.
And joining us now by phone is Kevin Cooney, who everyone remembers with great fondness as the longtime news anchor at KCCI, and who, way back in 1979, was like Dave Busick, a young reporter who was assigned to cover the Pope. Welcome to Local Talk, Kevin. This is Paul and Dennis, and by the way, Dave Busick says hi.
I heard that. Hi back at you, Dave.
Kevin, it's a pleasure having you with us today to talk about your memories. We know Dave was at that church in Cumming. You were right in the midst of this mob at Living History Farms, 350,000 people. You're a young reporter. You're covering the Pope. What was it like?
Well, it was... It's really, even to this day, it's pretty hard to describe. It was an incredibly huge event, but it was also an incredibly intimate event. I think, as Paul was talking about earlier, if I heard correctly, talking about the silence at Living History Farms, and you had 350,000 people there. But it was, I had never certainly seen a crowd that size, so I think from our task to cover this, it seemed to be a daunting, intimidating task. But it was so I don't want to say it was so easy, but it was not. I don't think the difficult task that I had feared, I guess, because you have to remember, even though the preparation time was relatively short, like 6 weeks or something for this, it was enormous, the logistics of this type of thing. And at one time, I recall, and I was looking over some of the notes, you know, there were some of the stories from back then. At one time, they thought there could be 500,000 to 1 million people there. This was as far west, I believe, as the Pope was going, if I recall correctly. He may have been making another trip to the West Coast, but I don't think so. So there was this concern that, you know, Des Moines would be inundated by half the country, so to speak, you know, or representatives thereof. And indeed, there were many stories of people who came hundreds of miles to this particular event. But the logistics of it were a story in itself, and the logistics of how we prepared for it I don't think we have probably prepared for a story to this degree ever since. Dave mentioned helicopters. We had runners who could not drive anywhere near the Living History Farms. Paul, as you were saying, you lived in Clive. Well, we had to get stories and videotape. We're covering it live, but we also had to get stories for that night, 6 and 10 o'clock news. We had crews out there covering all sorts of angles, but we had to get them back. And this, was in the days before you had a live unit. The live coverage was provided in a pool out there by Iowa Public Television. So they were handling the live pictures. Our crews were covering stories, shooting the video on videotape, and then we would send it to a central area where I was, and with Russ Van Dyke, and then we would give it in a what we used to call a potato sack, just one of those netted little bags, and filled with videotapes, and we would give it to our business manager, our treasurer at the station, a man by the name of Paul Fredrickson, who eventually became the general manager of the station for many years. But at this time, he was our business manager. And he was also an avid runner. And so he would take these videotapes. He and some members of the Ankeny Running Club had agreed to help us out. And they would run them. I thought they ran them to... I thought it was Urbandale Golf and Country Club. It may have been Hyperion. I'm not sure. My recollection is not that clear right now, but I thought we got cleared for the Urbandale Golf and Country Club, where they would coordinate with that helicopter that Dave mentioned. The helicopter would come back and fly back to Des Moines, and Dave wasn't sure where it landed. It landed behind a building called Hawthorne Hill, which is at 10th and Pleasant, and they had a nice large parking lot back there. So we got cleared to do that. And so several times during the course of the event, videotape was flown back to the downtown Des Moines, and then it was taken across the street over to KCCI. And we had instructions. We had sheets. I'm getting way into the weeds here, but it was the logistics and the planning that went into the coverage of this thing for our 6 and 10 o'clock news was almost as extensive as the coverage or as the planning that went into it by the diocese and everyone else that was involved. It was an incredible event, and it was my particular job there was to kind of act as the coordinator, kind of the field producer for everything that was going on at Living History Farms in terms of KCCI. So I was working with Russ during the live broadcast, and I was working with the news crews who were out covering a variety of different stories.
So basically you were talking about where you were positioned, and where were you out there on Living History Farms turf in relation to where the Pope was, Kevin?
We were pretty far away, to be honest with you. We had a clear shot. They had a whole press row out there, so to speak, of an area where you could watch and see what was going on live. And I have hold this up to the radio, Kevin, so people can see it. I have a map here of basically what you have to remember. Living History Farms was nothing like it is now. The town, the beautiful job that was accomplished out there over the past 40 years was virtually non-existent at this time. There was the mansion, there was a big barn, and there were a couple of other outbuildings, but the whole town set up and all that stuff, that didn't exist out there at the time. There were a couple of small buildings, and they were in the process of doing a lot of planning. But Living History Farms, just a few years earlier, had been a what they referred to as a prison farm. I mean, it was a nice little or large area out there. So to answer your question, I would say we were probably, maybe an eighth of a mile or so as I look at this particular map where the press setup was. The altar itself, if people are familiar with Living History Farms, the altar itself is where the church of the land, as it is called, at Living History Farms is now. That is the site of the altar for when the Pope was there, and that was obviously the significance of selecting that particular location to build the church. And we were, I don't know, probably about 500 yards or so to the west of that press area that was set up. And I can't tell you, you know, how Iowa Public Television was the only facility that had the multiple camera switching facilities and stuff like that. You wanted to have that out of Living History Farms because that was the focus of the whole visit out there, and it was obviously the biggest event. So Living History Farms handled the pool operation out there, and like with Dave at St. Patrick's, Russ Van Dyke was doing the audio feed for us on Channel 8, but everybody had the same picture, Channel 5, Channel 8, Channel 13, Channel 11. We all had the same pictures because we were all using pool feeds during the live coverage that particular day.
Kevin, what do you remember about the crowds at Living History Farm? We've heard from you and Dave and from Paul Wearson here, it was very quiet out there, but who was there? Had families come out with their small children? Was this a big family affair? They're bringing their kids out to see this once-in-a-lifetime event. What were the crowds like?
It was a very well-mannered crowd. It was families. It was religious. There were obviously priests and nuns and majority of lay people, but it wasn't just Catholics either. I think there were a lot of people who realized that this was a once-in-a-lifetime event. Here is the head of the Roman Catholic Church, who also remember popes before John Paul didn't travel. You can go back to, I think it was about 1961, when Pope Paul VI came to the United Nations, and that was like one of the first times that a sitting pope had left Italy. So this was, popes just didn't travel, period. And this pope, I think this was maybe his second or third trip that he had made outside the confines of Vatican City and Italy. And so this was truly a unique event. We're almost used to it now because, you know, Pope John Paul started the whole thing of a traveling pope, so to speak. And you also have to remember he was a world pope. John Paul II was the, if I recall, was the first pope in centuries who was not Italian. He was Polish, so he had more of a world view, and I think that contributed to his desire to travel. He wasn't literally or figuratively born and raised, in Italy. To elaborate a little bit more, I was impressed not only by who the crowds were, but how far they came. And again, Paul, like you were saying, you walked from Clive. We covered stories of people who, you know, there were pilgrimages. There were people parking up at the as Dave said, you know, the Interstate 3580 was blocked from the west Mixmaster almost to the east Mixmaster to accommodate the parking. Now, there were some shuttle buses that were helping people, but there were people who walked a good 4 or 5 miles there were from Waukee. They had meeting points that they were setting up. We have a story. I wish I could find it here. I dug out some of my old notes, and there was a I'm continuing to look for it here while we talk. I remember Connie McBurney forwarded a note to me from a priest, actually, from Eagle Grove, who had written a letter to her like 2 weeks ahead of time and wanted to know what direction the wind was going to be that day because he was going to ride his bicycle down. He thought that Connie would be able to tell him a couple of weeks ahead of time what the wind direction was going to be on October 4th, so he would know whether he had to ride into the wind, or maybe he should drive partially.
Well, Kevin, it just illustrates the credibility that she had, you know. The weather person for Central Iowa, and she should be able to know which way the wind will blow several weeks from. You know, I remember a story in the paper. We talked about the serenity, the behavior of the crowd. I remember Living History Farms set up several shocks of corn, and they intended for people to take those for souvenirs. After this event was over, these shocks were entirely undisturbed. Nobody, they thought that would be irreverent to dismantle those shocks of corn. Yeah. So it shows you how reverent and serene that crowd was, how well behaved.
It really was. Yeah, you're exactly right. And the there was a great deal of concern of how it might be commercialized, the visit. And there were some people selling souvenirs. If you're familiar with the setup or with the layout of Des Moines, there was no traffic other than foot traffic allowed from, I believe it was 86th Street, to Living History Farms and out to the west to the interstate. And that is the stretch, 86th Street to... 125th or so out there. So it was a long haul for a lot of people to walk. There were a lot of buses that were dropped off at 86th Street. You know, they were parking on the interstate, but that was parking. You couldn't drive on the interstate. It literally turned into a parking lot. And so people were coming from all over the place. I'll tell you one thing that was also undisturbed, and it was, as a journalist, it was just one of those little things. I noticed when we were leaving after the event was over, the Register and Tribune had done a spectacular job of covering this particular event and everything leading up to it. And one of their, you know, big plans was that they were going to publish a special edition, an extra. For those of you who are old enough to remember extras, these were additional.
You've got to be old.
The Des Moines Tribune was the afternoon newspaper, and obviously, this particular event was going to end beyond their deadline, so they were going to publish, and they did publish, a 50-cent extra that it was basically about 8 pages long with pictures, and it was an incredible effort of back in the days before digital technology to get this thing, and the idea was to get these out to the periphery, out to the 86th and Hickman, out to the interstate, and they would have people hawking the newspapers out there after the event was over. They would be walking out, and there would already be a newspaper printed, and it worked very well. Indeed, they had thousands and thousands of newspapers out there. Unfortunately, the planners were so efficient in their planning that when the Pope's visit was over, there, people walked, and it took a relatively short amount of time for people to get back to their rendezvous points, to get back to their cars and everything like that. Well, there were thousands and thousands of these extra editions sitting around, because by the time they got out there to the site, almost everybody was gone. Everybody had left. Sure, there were plenty of people still around, but it just shows how efficient the planning was to get this many thousands and thousands of people into and out of a relatively small area in a short period of time. It was an incredible event and very well executed.
And we are very pleased to have with us, this is Local Talk Wednesday, Dennis Hart and Paul Wearson. On the phone with us live, Kevin Cooney, the longtime great anchor of KCCI Television in Des Moines, who was at Living History Farms 40 years ago this coming Friday as a young reporter covering the visit of Pope John Paul II. Kevin, I refer back to, you were a very young reporter back then. We were all younger back then. What was it like covering this event with 300,000 plus people at Living History Farms? You're in your 20s as a reporter. Was there any sense of, oh my gosh, this is overwhelming? What do you remember? What you were feeling like?
Well, I did feel a little bit overwhelmed, but we had, our managing editor, assignment editor at that time, a man by the name of Mike Reynolds, who was married to Connie McBurney, and Mike is no longer with us, but he and I and Paul Rhodes had spent weeks and weeks realizing that this was going to be a huge, huge event. So there was a lot of planning that went into the logistics. I mean, we had reporters, let me just run down some names for you, Michelle Parker, Bill Johnson, Rob Davis, Mark Braun, Phil Benson. All these people were covering things out at the Living History Farms. But how are you going to get out there? I mean, how are you going to get all your people out there? Are you going to make them walk? carrying all this equipment, and how are you going to do it? Well, it's kind of like a job. You're getting a job. It's who you know sometimes. Well, Paul Rhodes was a very active member of what was then called the Racquet Club, the tennis club that was right across the street on Hickman Road from Living History Farms. I believe it's called Aspen Athletic now. But anyway, we had all these people and others, including photographers, we went out there the night before with all our equipment, and we basically bedded down out there. They had food catered in for us and stuff like that. So, and it turns out it was a stroke of genius because traffic trying to get in the morning was just a zoo. Unless you were walking in, and like I said, we didn't want to have people hauling in literally tons of equipment. So we all slept at the Racquet Club, and we were all up at 6 o'clock in the morning to start covering. There were no morning newscasts at that time, so we were doing preliminary stuff to cover things for our noon news, and our coverage of the event, and then the. Idea of just literally walking across the street was just like, oh, this is, we really felt kind of puffed up. We were pretty smart. we didn't have to walk in for miles. I do recall one incident, and Paul, maybe you remember this. There was coverage. You got to remember that there were national media, regional media, all the stations from Chicago and Minneapolis, Kansas City, they all had their people here. And it was a restricted airspace. It was absolutely no air travel or anything around Living History Farms. Well, evidently the news helicopter pilot for a Minnesota, Minneapolis station didn't get that news. And he was flying over Living History Farms at about 6 o'clock in the morning, getting aerial footage for their morning newscast up there, before the whatever they had on at that time. I don't know, remember which station it was, but just like the stations here, we had morning newscasts. And he was ordered down by the FAA immediately, and he landed in kind of a remote area on the property of Living History Farms. And the Secret Service went over and, as I understand it, lifted his license on the spot. And that helicopter stayed there for quite some time until they could find another pilot to remove it because their own pilot had his license pulled for violating the airspace. So it was a there were all sorts of little sidebar stories going on there. You want to hear another interesting one?
Yes.
You know who else was there and we could not get him for an interview? I mean, you're not going to get the Pope for an interview, and anybody else, is going to talk to you. But the one person who did not talk to us was a comedian who was covering the events for, I think, probably Saturday Night Live, or maybe he was actually covering it for a news organization. But if you remember the character Father Guido Sarducci.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
On Saturday Night Live, a comedian by the name of Don Novello. He was there. And we thought, oh, God, this is this is going to be the great feature story. You know, the Father Guido Sarducci, who was an iconic comedian on Saturday Night Live, covering the Pope, he wouldn't talk to us. And I don't know if contractually he was prohibited from doing it, but it was just like, it was one of the little disappointments of, you know, oh, what a great story that would have been. But it didn't happen. There were many other stories.
Well, Kevin, you were a CBS affiliate. That might be it. He's NBC. But, you know, I was wondering if the network sent someone to work with you, a talking head from the network.
I don't recall. That's a good question. I really don't recall. And I was looking over my notes, and I didn't see any indication that there would be network coverage here.
That would really not be the case today. There'd be somebody, you know, from New York.
Nora O'Donnell would be here.
Yeah, Nora. Yes, she would. Yep. That's true.
Everybody and their brother would be here.
Yes, they would.
But, you know, Kevin, last night I was watching KCCI with all the coverage of the storms, and you could just see all the advancements of the digital world.
Oh, gosh.
There were people calling in from their cars and split screen and instant pictures from people with taking pictures of clouds somewhere down by Cumming. And I thought, all of that was legwork for you folks, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it was, like I said, you know, it was literally legwork for the folks who were running the videotapes to the helicopter rendezvous point. And that was a few miles. I mean, those were, and they had to make like 3 or 4 round trips. As a matter of fact, we gave Paul Fredrickson a special award at our company party that year for, you know, accomplishments above and beyond the.
Kevin, we have a couple of minutes left. What I recall that night at 10 o'clock is Russ Van Dyke leading the newscast with one of the most iconic lines I have ever heard. I remember it to this moment. I've taught this in journalism classes at Iowa State and elsewhere, and I've said it was one of the greatest lead lines I've ever heard. Your 10 o'clock newscast that night, Russ comes out and says, "The Pope has come and gone, but the memory of his visit will live forever." And it has. I remember that to this moment, that line. I can see Russ delivering it right now. And I want to compliment you, and I know Paul joins me, and Paul Hertz, our engineer. You were one of the four main great anchors at KCCI over 60 years at this station. That's so unusual at any station in the United States. Russ Van Dyke, Paul Rhodes, Kevin Cooney, and now Steve Carlin succeeding you. You've had a great career at KCCI. You're an iconic anchor. Everybody misses you. How's retirement going with you and Molly?
We're loving every single minute of it.
Do you miss television, though? Do you miss being on the air when there's a big storm like last night?
I don't miss being on the air. I miss covering it. I got into this business really not to be an anchor, but to be a reporter and be a writer and to tell stories. And I think, you know, anchor for almost, I don't know, a bazillion years. But my most fond memories are those of covering stories, of meeting people, of doing the old Kevin Cooney covers Iowa thing. Mm-hmm. That's what I absolutely love the most. And I love that because it was great storytelling and the opportunity to meet a lot of real people. And so that's what I miss. I don't miss coming home at 11 o'clock at night. And, something that every young budding TV journalist should remember, that the best jobs have the worst hours.
Yeah. And, Kevin, will you promise to come back with us on Local Talk on the 50th anniversary, 10 years from today?
Sure.
The best to you and Molly, of course, your wife, a fine reporter and anchor, and Des Moines misses you. Trust me, you two are iconic, and we wish you the very best in retirement.
Well, thank you very much for having a good time.
Kevin, thank you for joining us. Kevin Cooney of KCCI, Paul, this show with Dave Busick and Kevin Cooney, I have enjoyed it immensely.
Always been fun, and if we do cover that again several years from now, I'll be speaking to you from assisted living somewhere.
And we want Paul Hertz to be our engineer.
That's
10
true.
Years from
we'll
today.
Reunite the trio here.
Our thanks to Kevin Cooney and Dave Busick. Great, great, iconic people from KCCI-TV, the number one station in Des Moines for 60 years, and they do a great job. From that moment when they signed on to this moment, and last night was another example when they went wall-to-wall coverage with all the storms going on. Great team down there. You have been listening to Local Talk Wednesday. I'm Dennis Hart.
Local Talk also airs today at noon and 5 p.m. here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. And you can hear a recording of the show later today online at khoifm.org, as well as find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. Also remember that KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org.
As always, our theme song is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their iconic CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. You can hear it underneath me right now. Local Talk, a radio production workshop as well as a show. So if you'd like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come on down and join the Local Talk team. That includes Kevin Cooney if he wants to come down and join
That's
the Local
right.
Talk
team. That's right. He could have a new career.
Come on up, Kevin.
Well, now stay tuned for Headline News and Democracy Now! At 8. And Morning Masterpieces at 9. And remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and
we'll see you again on the radio.
Support for KHOI is provided in part by Stevens Auditorium, presenting The Kingdom Choir, Monday, October 7th at 7 p.m. Tickets and more information can be found at center.iastate.edu.